Welcome to the Three Martini Lunch. Grab a stool next to Greg Corumbus of Radio America and Jim Garrity of National Review. Three Martini's coming up.
Hey, really glad you're with us for the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And Jim, let's start with one we had nominated as a bad martini earlier in the week, decided another story had been more pressing, but it was certainly a big one. And that was that there was a bipartisan approach to immigration reform that the Democrats were trying to jam through before the end of the lame duck session while they still controlled the House. It just reeked of trying to slip a big issue past folks while they're distracted by the holiday season and while Republicans seem to be in a very giving mood up on the Senate side. But now it looks like that's probably not going to happen. Ed Morrissey over at Hot Air, as well as Karen Townsend there, saying it's dead on arrival. I hope that's the case. I'm not sure I'd classify it that way quite yet. But this was a bipartisan effort from Tom Tillis and Kyrsten Sinema. In exchange for more money for border personnel, they wanted to basically grant amnesty to DACA recipients. And that number has somehow risen from 700,000 to 2 million over just the past few years. And they want to rapidly speed up asylum claims, which would be fine. The question is, how many are getting in and what constitutes an asylum claim? I have a concern about that, certainly. But Jim, it's obvious that there was not a lot of concern here to actually getting the border secure. It's as much of a sieve as it's been in our, well, certainly since we've been doing the podcast, probably in our adult life. And there seems to be very little attention to that in here. And I think until you get that under control and actually you want enforcement inside, and we talked about how LA County is the poster child for not wanting to do that. What to do with the people who are here and their immigration status needs to wait. And so hopefully Republicans can win the day here.
Greg, sometimes you can tell the value of an idea by how people want to enact it. If you have a proposal like, well, this would have to be done through executive order. Well, it's an acknowledgement that this idea proposal wouldn't pass through Congress. In this case, if it's a good idea and this type of deal, more border security in exchange for, de facto amnesty for the DACA recipients, well, then it's still going to be a good idea in January and February and beyond. And if you say, well, this is the kind of idea that House Republicans would never support, well, then maybe it's not such a good idea. House Republicans won their majority fair and square. The public no doubt knew that House Republicans would have a different attitude towards immigration issues than House Democrats, and they voted for them. But I think it's safe to say that border security was a big reason why Republican voters and why independent voters voted for Republicans in those House districts. And if they wanted something like this, they could have very easily voted for the Democrats. People did not want this. If this idea cannot survive with, a Republican House, you're probably going to have to add more to the border security components, and you might have to, adjust or water down the prospects of DACA recipients. Sure, there are a lot of DACA recipients who are perfectly fine, good people. We always hear about the valedictorians, et cetera. But let's say you have a criminal record. Let's say at some point you came to this country as a child, you have no memory of your previous country, and I can understand that argument that it would feel unfair. But what if the person has a criminal record? If you've joined a gang, if you dealt drugs, if you've had a drunk driving conviction, well, then maybe we aren't so blessed to have you in this country. Then maybe the government would be within its rights to send you back. This is not the kind of proposal that you should try to rush through, hoping that it kind of gets lost in the shuffle of the omnibus, which we talked about in a few podcasts ago, that the House and Senate and Biden administration want to get done between now and January 3rd, I believe is the day the new members take their oath of office. If you can't get it done under regular circumstances, it's probably not that good an idea. And someone's trying to pull a fast one by getting it done at the last minute.
Tom Tillis seems especially eager to do the bidding of the Democrats lately. So the fact that this is getting derailed, definitely a good thing. All right, on to our first great sponsor of the day, and that is Nutrafol. If you're pulling your hair out over Republicans rolling over for the Democrats on amnesty, you don't have to do that. You also don't have to choose between better hair growth and your health. There's a holistic solution for men that promotes both healthier hair and whole body wellness. So get ahead of thinning hair with Nutrafol's whole body approach to hair growth. No drugs, no compromises.
Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist-recommended hair growth supplement, clinically shown to improve your hair growth, thickness, and visible scalp coverage. Nutrafol's hair growth nutraceuticals go beyond genetics to multi-target the root causes of thinning hair. In a clinical study, men showed progressive improvement in hair growth and thickness after 3 months and 6 months.
You can grow thicker, healthier hair and support the 3 Martini Lunch by going to Nutrafol.com/men and entering the promo code Martini to save $15 off your first month's subscription. This is their best offer anywhere, and it's only available to U.S. customers for a limited time. Plus, free shipping on every order. Get $15 off at Nutrafol.com/men, spelled Nutrafol.com/men, promo code Martini. All right, Jim, on to our bad martini now, and there's certainly a good aspect to this, too. When you go to other people's countries, you do need to obey the law. Brittany Griner, by all accounts, did not do that when she brought the cannabis oil into Russia. Nonetheless, she was clearly a political prisoner, given the timing near the start of the Ukraine war. 9 years of hard labor for that crime seems to be excessively egregious, and who knows what in the world she endured in prison. Being in a Russian prison, especially at a time when they're trying to use you as a political pawn, it's not something that sounds appealing at all. So the fact that she's free is a good thing. President Biden announcing this morning that, in fact, the negotiation for Griner's release has been successful.
She's safe. She's on a plane. She's on her way home. After months of being unjustly detained in Russia, held under intolerable circumstances, Brittany will soon be back in the arms of her loved ones, and she should have been there all along. Make no mistake about it. This work is not easy. Negotiations are always difficult. There are never any guarantees. But it's my job as President of the United States to make the hard calls and protect American citizens everywhere in the world.
However, this is a prisoner swap, and it is not just him convincing the Russians to set Griner free. And so the person released, Victor Boot. Yeah, we talked about him back in July when this idea was first floated. This guy was an international arms dealer that the United States spent a lot of time trying to track down. Here's CBS News reporter Catherine Harris this morning explaining how the DEA agents who worked on that case feel about him being part of this swap.
Well, former DEA agents that were directly involved in this global manhunt for Victor Boot told us that they've always seen him as a major threat to U.S. national security because he was an arms dealer with global reach because of his deep Russian connections. He was someone who was willing to sell arms to drug cartels, to designated terrorist groups, and individuals with the intent and the capability of harming U.S. Americans and officials. In addition, what we heard from these former agents is that it was a Herculean effort to capture Boot across three continents in 2008. In Thailand, he was eventually extradited to the United States, where he was convicted of charges, including conspiring to kill Americans. And finally, they told us they want to see the families reunited, but they had deep concerns about any potential trade with Victor Boot because of the message they felt it would send, that it made good business sense to target Americans.
And so, Jim, back in July when this was first discussed, I said it's probably a little bit better than the Bo Bergdahl exchange, but not a lot. You said, I don't know, Greg. Have you seen what Victor Boot did here and the terrorists that he gave weapons to and what those people did with those weapons? And oh, by the way, back in July, it was supposed to be two Americans getting free in exchange for Victor Boot. Now it's just one. So, Jim, I think we can agree that Brittany Griner has served more than enough punishment for bringing some cannabis oil into Russia. But once again, Biden, maybe he learned at Obama's knee on the Bergdahl deal, got rooked on this one.
This is not just a bad martini. This is an infuriating martini. There are two aspects that drive me crazy. Three, I guess. The first is that I'm kind of surprised how many people really don't know about Victor Boot. You'd think that having a Nicolas Cage movie made about you would make you fairly well known in the public eye. Alternately, like every sleazy foreign arms dealer character you've ever seen in an action movie, pretty much is Boot is the inspiration for that. He is the real life equivalent of it, nicknamed the Merchant of Death. Pretty much since the end of the Cold War to about 2008, if there was a dictator or warlord or somebody who needed arms and was under an arms embargo and wanted to use those arms to fight a civil war, suppress a civil war, suppress a population, mow down enemies, Victor Boot was there and Victor Boot was making money on it. He was not convicted in a court of law of this, but he's widely believed to have armed the Taliban. He's widely believed to have sold weapons to Al-Qaeda. All over Africa, anywhere there was armies of child soldiers, anytime there were, you know, massacres going on, Victor Boot was the guy who made money off it. And Victor Boot is exactly the kind of human being who should spend the rest of his life in jail. It's not an exaggeration to say there was a point where he was the second most wanted individual on the planet after Osama bin Laden. So in that light, this is a really big deal. Because he was a Russian and former Russian army, Russia has always had this interest that somehow he was being unfairly targeted, unfairly prosecuted, or he wasn't such a bad guy, or he was just a good businessman, et cetera, et cetera. And or this idea that he's a Russian citizen and Russians just kind of believe that, you know, no foreign country should be judging and jailing our citizens, et cetera. Did I want to get Brittany Griner out? Of course. Any American should want to see U.S. citizens when they are unfairly detained, unfairly imprisoned, held in harsh conditions, denied proper counsel, denied what I think we'd all agree is a genuinely fair trial, and put to work camps and things like that. You know, it is the duty of the U.S. government to attempt to get those people out. However, the question is, what price are you willing to pay? And this is far, far too high a price, I would argue. Again, second most wanted man on the planet, most notorious arms dealer in modern history. He's got a demon's resume. The amount of blood on his hands is an ocean. I cannot overstate this. And then the second thing kind of comes out of this is like, well, if you do go ahead with this deal, what lesson does Putin and everybody else in the world take from it? Well, if you want to get something from the U.S. government, detain one of their citizens. Make something up, make some charges, put them in there. Make sure they can do press interviews to get back home. Make sure it creates this public, oh my God, we got to get this person home, so that eventually this administration, which just wants the bad news to go away, that just wants to get through the news cycle, will give you what you want. If we will release Victor Boot, there is not a single person who is inconceivable the U.S. would release. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, I mean, at some point, you take enough hostages, Biden might do that. Probably anybody else who's in our, the Shuna bomber, you know, you name the person. There's an excellent chance that at this point, if you generate enough political pressure, the Biden administration will cave. And I think this is a terrible precedent. This is paying the Dane geld, not only giving Putin what he wants, it is ensuring that he and everybody else takes the lesson of this is how you strong arm the American government. This is how you make the U.S. government do things it doesn't want to do. We're going to get more of this, not less of this. We have effectively negotiated with terrorists. We have effectively demonstrated we will pay the ransom. Us, we're going to get more of it. And the other thing, there's one other argument I'm hearing. I'm less convinced of this. It's actually a surprise. Victor Boot is actually only 55 years old, younger than I expected. I had the impression that he was an older guy. It's a question of if Boot is released, my expectation is he'll get kind of the Russian equivalent of club fed, detained or in the legal system, but he will have whatever cushiest, kindest, softest prison arrangement that the Russians have. That way the Russian government can keep an eye on him, but they have no interest in really punishing this guy. I don't think he'll go back to the arms trade. He's been out of the game, so to speak, for a long time. I don't know if his contacts are still useful. And there's always a chance that there's some sort of customer who's irritated with them and wants to deal with them. I don't think you'd say, oh, if we release this guy, he's going to go back to his old ways and he's going to, you know, become a notorious arms dealer again. I just don't know. I don't think anybody knows what Victor Boot is going to do from here on out. I do think, though, the precedent that this deal sets is much more dangerous for Americans. And I just kind of am extraordinarily frustrated. Is Griner's release good news? Yes, but it comes at an extraordinarily high price. And there are a lot of people who are already touting this as some sort of giant and significant diplomatic triumph of the Biden administration. And that is such a misreading of the situation, is utterly infuriating. And it makes me wonder if we are a mature enough and clear-thinking enough country to continue to function years to come.
Well, Chetan, that's extraordinarily well said. And it's obvious that negotiating is not the Biden administration's strong suit. Unbelievable, the trades they're willing to make. And obviously, he learned from some of the worst at that with Obama and Susan Rice. But if you need to cleanse your palate from that, no better place to do it. Omaha Steaks. Phenomenal deal that they're giving right now. 50% off site-wide, plus another $40 off when you use our code Martini. I can't tell you what a great gift this would be for you, a family member, a friend, yourself even. Omaha Steaks are tender and delicious. The burgers, the chicken, the dogs, whatever you order, you're going to love.
Other than any vegan friends you may have, everybody's going to like a gift of Omaha Steaks. They're naturally aged for the ultimate in tenderness, juiciness, and flavor. You can send an assortment of mouthwatering favorites that are guaranteed to impress, like the legendary butcher's cut filet mignon, the air-chilled boneless chicken, or the ultra-juicy burgers.
Omaha Steaks really is a gift from the heart, a gift that will be remembered with every unforgettable bite. Order with complete confidence today, knowing you are ordering the very best. Visit omahasteaks.com to save 50% off site-wide and use the promo code MARTINI at checkout to get that extra $40 off your order. Minimum order may be required. omahasteaks.com, promo code MARTINI at checkout. omahasteaks.com, code MARTINI. All right, Jim, on to our crazy martini now. And just yesterday, we talked about how Raphael Warnock narrowly won re-election. He'll get a full six-year term now, Herschel Walker falling short. And so you would think that Raphael Warnock would be thanking his supporters, talking about maybe what he wants to get done. We would probably hope that most of it doesn't get done over the next 6 years. Nonetheless, the grievances keep coming. We talked for days in the primary season. We talked about it leading up to the general election. We talked about it a little bit even leading up to the runoff, I think, how the early voting was setting just astonishing records in the state of Georgia. And this all after last year with Georgia and Texas and some others being accused of Jim Crow 2.0 about trying to clean up the voting system there. You get record turnout. You win re-election, despite the fact that Stacey Abrams helped, you know, get Major League Baseball to steal the All-Star game away from you and take it to Colorado and so forth. And Raphael Warnock is still alleging voter suppression. Here's what he said in his victory speech.
There are those who would look at the outcome of this race and say that there's no voter suppression in Georgia. Let me be clear. Just because people endured long lines that wrapped around buildings, some blocks long, just because they endured the rain and the cold and all kinds of tricks in order to vote, doesn't mean that voter suppression does not exist. It simply means that you, the people, have decided that your voices will not be silenced.
It's not just him, though, Jim. Here's Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer essentially saying the same thing.
But both in micro, what happened in Georgia, despite the efforts of Republican legislature to make it harder to vote, our people voted. People voted. Georgians voted. They said, we're not going to let these barriers stand in our way, even if we have to wait in line in the rain.
Jim, I guess some old narratives die hard. Record turnout, you win. You still got a problem with the way things were done because I guess you got to keep the talking point going.
Greg, I appreciate you putting in a reference to Die Hard at this time of year. But this is extraordinarily frustrating because I think you could have a fair argument about how much early voting time you should have. If you're going to do early voting, how many polling places should be open? What kind of hours are reasonable to expect? I think, you know, you can have a reasonable argument about whether too much is, you know, at some point you have too much availability. It becomes a waste of time, a waste of resources that people just aren't going to, you know, certain states, including our home state of Virginia and Minnesota, open up early voting more than a month before Election Day. And I think you can reasonably argue that's a ludicrous amount of money. It does not allow people, you know, when there's an October surprise or some sort of late news that might make people want to change their mind, even though I don't, you know, in most cases they don't. The people who vote early are generally the most committed partisans. But just generally, you know, Georgia did reduce the number of early days available, but it was still close to like 2 weeks. It was a really considerable amount of time. And the fact that they had higher than ever turnout for a midterm is a giant sign that, no, Georgians were just fine with this. Everybody who wanted to vote had a chance to vote. There was nothing excessive. There was nothing restrictive. There was nothing where people showed up. You know, obviously, there's a little bit of responsibility on your part as the voter. Make sure you're showing up at the right polling place. But by and large, it worked and it ran very smoothly. And they counted the votes pretty darn quickly. You know, it's interesting. You saw this denunciation of Georgia and the, you know, removal of the All-Star game and all of this kind of stuff. But in fact, you know, Georgia managed to run its election smoothly and quickly, a feat that New York has not been able to do, a feat that California has not been able to do. And if I still remember correctly, I don't think Delaware has any early voting whatsoever. So the argument that this is Jim Crow or Jim Eagle, Jim Crow on steroids, it never made sense. It never held up. And now we see the proof. And the irony is that Raphael Warnock is so committed to this narrative. He is so wound up and tied to this lie that Georgia has suppressed the vote that he has to insist it after an election he won with unprecedentedly high turnout. It's an absurdity there. I don't think this really persuades people anymore. But it is still very deeply annoying that Democrats insist this, and there are progressives out there who believe that somehow, you know, yeah, there was record turnout, only because the state's effort to suppress turnout didn't work. Which, by the way, if they didn't work, then why would we worry about them?
And you know what they consider suppression? Voter ID, your signature if it's an absentee ballot, things like that, that are an insult to people that they claim are disenfranchised by this. It's deeply popular to have voter ID and all these other provisions just to ensure the integrity of the vote. So, I mean, Jim, we have a lot of people talking about election deniers. What about ridiculous claims of voter suppression? Is that just as damaging to the system?
We've gotten really used to those who lose elections complaining about the process of the elections. It wasn't fair. They cheated. They hacked. You know, all that kind of stuff. Seeing Warnock, the winner, complain about the election really kind of feels like we're heading into some strange new territory here. That it's now almost reflexive. That even when the election runs smoothly and it comes out with the outcome you want, just out of obligation, you have to complain. No, this is all unfair. Democracy's dying. And, you know, the, you know, deep state's taking over. The fascists are taking over or something like that. After a while, Greg, I just kind of tune it out.
Yeah, they claim that the people overcame the system. No, the system made it easy to vote and harder to cheat. So if that's your problem, if that's what you consider suppression, then maybe the problem's with the way you look at elections, Senator Warnock. I don't know. Jim, have a good day. See you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity, National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks so much for being with us. Do subscribe to the Three Martini Lunch podcast. If you don't already, tell a friend about us as well. Thank you for your 5-star ratings and your kind reviews. Please keep those coming. Get us on your home devices. All you have to say is play Three Martini Lunch podcast. Don't forget about Jim's brand new novel, just in time for the holiday season, Gathering Five Storms, and the short story Saving the Devil. Follow us on Twitter. He's at Jim Garrity. I'm at Dateline_DC. Have a great Thursday and join us again on Friday for the next Three Martini Lunch.